CAE AM, Elgin. K270CO, Round Rock. Guests on the horn appear courtesy of the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Vaqueros now delivers and offers curbside pickup. For info on placing your lunch or dinner order, visit vaquerocafe.com. Your plane's low, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good morning, Austin, Texas, and welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballou.
Good morning, I'm Carl Mickelson. I gotta know, periodically I forget to ask, what is it like being Bob Ballou this week?
A lot of hair.
I like it. I kind of grows up. I don't have the volume to go up like that. That's it just climbs up through the visor.
Yeah, so here's the deal. It's time to get cut. It's been 6 months. Next Thursday would be 6 months, and our daughter is being born next Thursday, and I have a feeling that when we take pictures, my wife would prefer that I have hair that is half normal. So I have a feeling that I'm in talks. So the girl that cuts my hair left her position when all of this went down with the pandemic. And I talked to her and I said, hey, you know, can you still do it? She said, yes. So I'm trying to get in touch with her and figure out if there's a good time to do it, probably this weekend. It's been quite the journey, Carl. 6 months, my hair does nothing except grow up, and it doesn't do anything. When I do it for the news, the only thing I figured out I can do is pull out the back and make it look a little bit like Mike Gundy. But that's about it.
But you don't go on the news. I'm seeing what the viewers at home don't see. I'm seeing full volume, a good 8 to 10 inches from the top of your scalp. Like,
yeah, it's not good.
You're having to do I'm having to do product just to put on a cap these days. That's how much hair I've got. I don't have as much as you, but I've got a lot. I got a full blown mullet going, looking like I'm searching for my lost shaker of salt out there, man. So you've got to, you must have a process, a pre-show process to get that tamed, right?
So I just take a shower and put a little bit of I have this, it's bed head manipulator. It's not like sticky. It's not like, doesn't make your hair hard. It's just kind of a soft gel, and it kind of just holds, for doing the show at 6. And then, if I need to redo it a little bit for 10, I'll just wet it a little bit and go do it. But, again, this is playing through the hairstyle. Everybody asks that hasn't seen me, everybody asks what it looks like. And the only thing I can say is, the golfer I compare it to is Bruce Litsky. If you remember, he had a big visor and his hair stuck out the top of his visor. This is my hair right now. Looks like one of those visors you can buy where their hair pops out of the top of the visor. That's what my hair looks. Everybody thinks it's fake when they see it. And then, they realize it's atrociously not fake. And, I don't know.
I like it. I like seeing you on the news that way, 'cause it's kind of a show of solidarity that we're all kind of living a life of inconvenience and adjustment. So I do hope you get the haircut, 'cause I'm envious of everybody that's got a good tight look going right now, 'cause I certainly don't. So
I just don't know that I can stand it much longer. I think that's the biggest,
it's tough.
Again, like I said at the beginning of this, it's a once in a lifetime thing that I'll do. I'll never go more than 4 weeks without getting my hair cut. And at 4 weeks, I'm like annoyed by it. Like I like it really short. I'm lucky that I still have a lot of hair, so I'm not complaining by any means, but, and it's good to know I can do this if I ever need to. If there's ever a need to grow out my hair to make it look ridiculous, I have the ability.
Yeah, you know who you look like right now? Will Ferrell's got the same situation. Will Ferrell has been cut. He's doing the talk show circuit for some lately, so I've been seeing some Zoom calls with him. So
I like that.
You're in good company.
I will happily go with Will Ferrell. That's a great comparison.
Very good,
Carl. I don't know. I mean, last week we went like 12 minutes without talking about golf before we actually got into stuff. We're only 4 minutes in and we're going to talk golf, which is good.
That's tight, man. We are good at this. We are good.
Sure, our viewers appreciate it.
Hair check, done. Golf talk, possibly engaged.
Possibly. Make sure you check that off the list of our rundown here. Well, man, I mean, Colin Morikawa, just an incredible week, an incredible Sunday. And, you know, I really mean this, Carl, when I say this. When you think back to the 2013 PGA or 15 PGA or when Jimmy Walker won or Jason Day or these guys that have won PGA championships, I don't know that there's an iconic moment that sticks out with them. I don't know that there may be one or two here and there in the PGA championship that you could really go back to and go, oh, that was that one thing that happened. But I don't know that I will ever forget the tee shot that Colin Morikawa hit on 16. If you're going to win a tournament, that's how you win a tournament is you – I have a buddy that used to work in TV that works for Let It Fly Media. His name's Tom Martin, works up in Kansas City. And they were they were one of the media outlets that got to do commercials and, like, little short videos for the PGA Championship this year. It's a phenomenal gig. And he was on 16 shooting Colin from the ground. And you could read Colin's lips, and he's like – he basically said something to the effect of, well, I just got to drive it. He looked at his caddy and said, well, I just got to drive it. And did. And hit it to 8 feet, 10 feet, made the eagle putt. And it was kind of smooth sailing from there. There are shots in golf that you remember for whatever reason. There are moments in golf. I mean, the Tiger chip on 16 at the Masters, Jack's putt. I mean, all these things that will – you know, we'll go down as some of the great moments and shots, putts, chip shots in golf history. I don't know that we can say there's been a tee shot that is going to remain this iconic. Can you come up with one? A tee shot, not on a par three, but a tee shot that everybody goes, I will always remember in a major that moment.
No, you really can't, because tee shots rarely get that close to the hole. Right. I think it was 7 feet 1 inch. I read just the other day, and it was you said it. It was truly iconic. It was there. There was an argument on Twitter at the close of 2019, because the close of 2019 was also the close of the decade. Controversial figure, former Golf Channel personality Peter Kessler, contended that there was not a single iconic shot hit in any of the 40 majors from 2010 through 2019. He says, name me an iconic golf shot. There was, and his point that was the ball and equipment is really taking shot making out of the game. No, there's no question. Colin Morikawa's drive was pure. It was confident. It was good. It's every bit in the lore, every bit as historic as Arnold Palmer's shot at the 1960 U.S. Open at Cherry Hills. I mean, I think it's that big. It was that – because you have to remember that point in the tournament, there was still a huge logjam. I mean, everybody that's texting me, and I'm texting back and forth, saying, I don't have a single clue which of these eight guys who's tied for the lead 60-something holes into this tournament is going to win. This is – pretty freaking cool.
Very rare.
Just to watch. Yeah, very rare. And I don't know I said, okay, my prediction is 13 wins outright, 12 it gets into a playoff. Now, 13 I was correct on. 12, nobody got to 12 other than – nobody got or stayed at 12 other than Colin Morikawa.
Carl, I think if you're in those final groups and you look up and see that Colin just went from 11 to 13, you know it's over. You're probably not going to go birdie-birdie to finish this golf course. You know, maybe you birdie 16 if you're on 15, but I you saw the look on Paul Casey's face. He's on 17.
It was lights out. That's when golf is a sporting event. When a guy hits, it comes to rest, and we all go lights out. That was the pick six that ended the game, you know, right when the other team thought they had momentum and were going to go down and tie. It was a knockout punch. You so rarely get a knockout punch in golf. Matthew Wolf had one over Bryson DeChambeau last year. But in a major, when there's that many guys at the top of the game playing that well, he made the decisive statement at the decisive moment. And there wasn't anything anybody could do at that point.
And I think my question is, who else hits that shot? And there were plenty of opportunities for guys to to roll one up there to get it somewhat close to do it. And like, nobody did it. I mean, they were all either hitting into the bunker. Tony Finau hit one way right into the tree and it dropped down. I mean, there were guys that made their attempt at trying to do something anywhere in the vicinity of the green. And Morikawa hits it to 7 feet. And his caddy saying, go in. I mean, that's how good it looked to them.
It started to track a little bit. I mean, you knew it was going to stop at some point, but it wouldn't have shocked me if it got to 2 or 3 feet, which would just have been all the more stunning. But
he wouldn't have missed that putt.
No, he wouldn't have missed that putt. No,
that's what I'm saying. He would have missed. Remember the Colonial. The second turn of the year? Was it Colonial?
Yeah, he lost a burger. Was that where he missed? He got into the playoff just barely, then lost on the second hole.
Missed the like 2 or 3 footer to lose the tournament. And I think he had another one after that it was against Justin Thomas when he won the tournament there.
Correct.
And he had he had another short putt that he kind of rattled in, and even he looked up like, you got to be kidding me.
Wow.
But yeah, that was just the dagger. I loved it. I mean, as much as, you know, I was in a square game and I had Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka and I was rooting for them for those purposes. It was thrilling to watch someone hit a shot like that and win the tournament the way he won it. And I will give the PGA credit as well. You know, it was tough Friday and Saturday and then Thursday a little bit, but Friday and Saturday especially, it was really tough.
Difficult scoring, yeah.
And I think that's good. I like that a lot. But what they did on Sunday was they said before the round, we want someone to go win this tournament. We don't want people to lose it. And I thought that was a really good approach. As much as I love seeing those guys struggle, and I've told you this before, I love when a U.S. Open comes down and guys are even par, one over or one under, because, you know, that the struggle for them and the grind it takes for guys that are that good to shoot even par, to me, is a real test of golf, and it's really fun to watch. But to get to that moment and see the PGA go, we want somebody to go win it, and then somebody went and won it, the way Colin did, I just thought was spectacular.
Yeah. Did you freeze? Like I said, that's when golf becomes a big time sport, is when you see somebody do something so dominant, so overpowering, when the rest of the field is that good. I mean, when everybody's gunning at the leaderboard, he did something truly iconic and truly special. And deservedly so. I mean, he's been so good and so consistent. Tee to green, he's such a good ball striker. You combine that with his fearlessness, and there's just so few weaknesses in his game. I mean, you could take a knock on driving distance, and, you know, you touched on short putting a little bit, but this is a guy that could contend almost any week of the year. He'll be very intriguing to see in a U.S. Open because he hits it so straight. He's got such good command of the fade, which lends to getting a difficult pin position. So it will be very fascinating to see what this does for Colin Morikawa's confidence moving forward. It's just so intriguing. You know, we talk about, you know, guys that are 23 years old, you know, setting their legacies. And we were talking about Jordan Spieth like this 5 years ago. It's just amazing how young so many of these guys that we're witnessing play the game. I mean, golf has almost become like tennis or women's tennis. It's like, you know, you better catch them while they're teenagers and in their 20s, because by 30, they're just going to be, you know, honorary people that show up and, you know, wave at the crowd. I mean, I don't think that's the case. Golf has longevity, but it's just amazing to me that young people are really getting it done. We're not since Tiger really and Jordan Spieth have we really seen anyone outside of, you know, Rory McIlroy. But they get younger and younger. Kind of that tipping point was Rory, where everybody just kind of got younger and younger. Rory, Ricky Fowler, Jordan all kind of started young, and it just doesn't – the trend doesn't seem to be reversing by any means.
And Jordan was the guy that everybody was saying, oh, he's going to chase Jack's, you know, major record. This is where he's heading. He's going after these numbers being so young, and then it just kind of all fell apart. And it's interesting because – you know, Colin's 23, he's in that group with Victor Hovland and Matthew Wolff. And we saw Scottie Scheffler play great, obviously, to finish T4 and play as well as he did all weekend. the Texas X, and he, you know, he really was kind of a part of that. It was that threesome that everybody was talking about with Wolf, Hovland, and Morikawa, but Scheffler was right there. I mean, as dominant as he was on the Corn Ferry, and the ability that he's shown already on the PGA Tour, especially to do that in a major and play four good rounds the way he did, really shows his ability. And I think those four guys have a legit possibility of being really good for a long time to come. But and it's our job. It's what we want to do because we love it. Is having these conversations about, can Colin Morikawa win 27 majors because he won one at 23? And that's like the place your mind wants to go, because I think the reason we have these conversations, if you really step back and think about it, the reason we talk about this stuff so much is we want the next Jack. We want the next Tiger. We want somebody to step into that role and be the guy you can't turn away from every time he hits a shot on TV. Tiger's still that way. They show every single shot Tiger hits because everybody still wants to see him, and there's nobody else on tour like him. And maybe there never will be. I don't know. But you figure at some point somebody else is going to come along and do similar things. Mm-hmm. It's Jack and Tiger. And we want the next person that's going to be like that. So when Colin Morikawa is 23 and wins the PGA Championship, especially the way he won it, I think everybody goes, okay, well, can he go win the Masters now? Well, maybe he'll have the Grand Slam. Maybe he'll win the Open next year. Maybe he'll win seven straight majors. I mean, you get all these thoughts in your head that are so unrealistic, especially considering the amount of talent that's on the PGA Tour and the European Tour. I think it's a want. It's something that we all want, but it's very unrealistic to put expectations on anyone. Even if Colin were to win two more majors this year, it's unrealistic to put a number of 18 majors out there because he has three at 23.
Right. Yeah, you just start extrapolating numbers, and it can go crazy high like that 27 or whatever that number would be. My opinion on that is that the landscape has changed so much. And there was nothing more indicative than the way that leaderboard looked very deep into the golf tournament on Sunday. Anybody could win any week. Look at the top 10. I mean, Paul Casey's 43. Dustin Johnson should have about six or seven majors right now. He has one. Matthew Wolf is kind of like the yin to Colin Morikawa's yang. Jason Day's there in every major. DeChambeau is kind of trying to transform the game, let alone his career. You know, Tony Finau, we think, is going to be there. Scottie Scheffler's, you know, in the same boat with Morikawa and Wolf, you know, trying to prove his legacy way ahead of schedule, at least according to us old curmudgeons, you know, and the way we've always interpreted golf. Only ever seen Tiger. It brings me back to my conversation with David Faraday one time. I said, just the game, it was when Tiger was struggling and a bunch of Joe Schmoes were winning majors, and the game was just a little blah for whatever reason. We were in need of a hero. And I said, David, does the game need a dominant figure to be at the heights it was with Tiger? And he goes, you're just calling Tiger a dominant figure. He's so much more and so much more multidimensional than that. And the things he's done week in, week out for, you know, so many years, for such a long period of time, he's a dominant figure is an understatement when it comes to what Tiger Woods did. So I've always took that to heart because, you know, Faraday was, you know, 12 feet from Tiger for most of the things that he did, you know, on the biggest stages. So what is the next big star look like? I mean, is it just going to keep shuffling every 3 months, 6 months, and people are just going to continue to have their runs? Or is somebody going to be head and shoulders? I mean, maybe in 2 to 3 years, we'll have a much deeper appreciation for the run Brooks Koepka has had or is on, or, you know, and think, you know, because if you look too at Phil Mickelson's career, how much we'd be talking about Phil as a Mount Rushmore guy if Tiger just somehow didn't exist. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes you're just a slave to your generation, or you're one of the guys that, you know, help defines it. But it's fascinating because Morikawa just doesn't, there's really, it's the way I looked at Henrik Stenson and Martin Keimer, guys that swung it so pure about six, you know, five, six, 10 years ago.
It's like you look at the guy on the range, you look at the guy hit his first tee shot down the middle of the middle of the middle on the first tee, like, how does this guy not win about 15 or 20 times every year? Because there's nothing missing from what this guy does with the ball.
Yeah, and you mentioned a bunch of names there of guys who are, you know, pretty special on the PGA Tour, and you missed about 25 names.
Exactly.
That's exactly the thing right now is there are so many guys that you could look at and say
it's the depth. When you talk about Cameron Champ or Patrick Reed that snuck up the leaderboard, or Siwoo Kim who's always there, and Daniel Berger who's like kind of like you that we talked about Charles Howell, a guy that's just always kind of there, always cashing checks. Again, Brendan Todd is a major away from having again bottling an entire career in one season. So much going on. There's just and Hao Tung Lee, who was kind of the story of the tournament for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Daniel Berger is the guy. He's the guy to me that I think in the last 5 or 6 years has been a guy that everybody's been waiting on. Is he going to make that move? Is he going to make that turn? Is he going to become a great player? Because you see the ability. And then you see him win and you see him compete at the PGA and get his name up there on the leaderboard. He's a really good golfer. And I think he's one of those guys that has a chance in the next year to really show that he belongs in a more elite group of guys that you go to and you say, if I'm going to pick 10 guys to win the PGA Championship, he's going to be one of them.
I agree with that.
He still has a step to take. He's not there yet, but he's certainly making progress. And I think that's probably the one guy I would point to that I would say he's just in that meddling stage of he's getting a little older in air quotes. He's getting a little older. And he's really got a chance to take that major next step.
I think he's on pace, right? It's the next logical progression. And he's just indicative of so many guys on the leaderboard, but he's proven himself. He's just one of those guys that's the next step away from being one of the guys we talk about. I mean, again, I look at him as a perennial Ryder Cupper at this point, which is saying a lot, which means he's one of the top 12 guys, you know, on this side of the pond, which is saying a heck of a lot.
And that'd be an interesting conversation to have right now is, you know, who are the guys that you're going to trust on the Ryder Cup team right now?
Now that you have six picks.
I'm not talking about based on FedEx Cup standings and based on Ryder Cup standings and based on what I'm talking about. You get to go pick 12 guys. And maybe we'll do that either later in this show or in the next.
I like that. Yeah.
You talk about guys that have been there, guys that have an opportunity to, Webb Simpson would have to be included. You know, there are guys that, and Webb Simpson, and I don't remember which Ryder Cup it was. Was it 15 or 13? I don't remember, but he basically topped a shot off the tee. I think he still made par.
Right.
He hit a tee shot like 100 yards. And, I mean, they're just guys that in those moments that you want on your side and guys you want to be, the guy that you're standing next to when you get to Sunday and you got to win your individual match. So I think that'd be a really interesting one right now is, are there guys that wouldn't be included on the team that you'd want to see on the team? Is Matthew Wolff a guy that you'd want to see on the team? There are all these guys right now that you could go through. We'll have to do that. Right. We also want to get to Brooks Koepka and some of the comments he made, and we'll do all of that when we come right back on the other side of this break as we're getting up next to it. But we've got a ton to get to as we're just waking up on a Saturday morning. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Welcome back on a Saturday morning, Austin, Texas. We are thrilled you're joining us, hopefully on your way to the golf course to beat the heat, as it's going to be 647 degrees with the heat index today. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn. Thank you for joining us this morning. I think four days of record-setting heat, and I played in it yesterday. It's a lot. It's a lot to get out there.
I did too.
Play the afternoon, and that is not a real fun time. But it happens.
Same.
It's okay. So right before we
it happens.
No, go ahead.
You have to do. No, you do what you have to do. It's just I'm enjoying playing. I'm enjoying watching golf. I mean, I, being in the industry, it's just so cool to see every golf course packed, and everybody I talk to on a Zoom call or in an email says, yeah, we're doing more rounds than we've done since 2000X or 19. It's just incredible that golf is kind of on the tear that it's on. And, you know, again, speaking to how well that the PGA Tour has done with its bubble, what a good job the PGA of America did putting on the PGA Championship. Again, not to cut you off, but I wanted to ask you in the last segment, did the status in your mind of the PGA Championship kind of go? I mean, it's the only thing we've got right now. So it's the prettiest girl at summer camp. So so would she be the prettiest girl at your high school when you go back? Don't know. But TPC Harding Park as a municipal, the way they've got it, the changes they've made, but it still has, you know, it still has kind of the low to the ground greens, some real intrigue around the green surrounds. Turned out to be a great venue. And like you said, them taking control of it. Did PGA Championship kind of go up in your book and maybe no longer the redhead stepchild of the four majors?
All right. So here's my thing that I saw that I loved. I think it's still the fourth major. And I think you'd have a hard time convincing anyone otherwise. And I think there are people who would honestly probably put the Players Championship right there with it. I just think that's another that and I know they call it the fifth major, but I think you could make the comp. What I loved, and this was such a great idea, and I'm not sure who originally put it out there, but the idea that I saw was they need to make the PGA Championship the major of public courses. And they go to public courses every year that people get to go play, and they make the PGA Championship that type of event. And I loved that idea. Now, I don't know if that's realistic or not. But I love the idea of them looking into the future and saying, we have all these public courses. Where do we want to play majors? And let's go fix up that golf course. We'll put the money into it to make it happen. I mean, remember, TPC Harding Park was a parking lot in 1998.
For the U.S. Open. Yeah, yeah, so, that's right.
I mean, I have buddies that live in the San Francisco area, and they've all talked about going to play Harding Park. One of them said it's his favorite course out there.
Right.
I love that. I love that my buddies can go play it. Now, is it expensive? Of course it is. And we need to do something about that too. And I know Rory McIlroy's talked a lot about that. And again, I'm just going to keep going back to him as the ideal person for young golfers to emulate, because he is so respectful of this game. He cares so much about doing the right thing. He had someone step on his ball when they were looking for it, and it gave him a better lie, and he put it back into a worse spot because he didn't feel like the lie was right, and he made a bogey. That is the mentality and the genuineness we all need to have in our daily lives, especially, but on the golf course. To do something like that just shows his mental approach to life and to telling the truth and to being an honest person. I have so much respect for Rory in so many ways, and I thought that was just one more example of it. But back to the point, I think, and he was a big proponent of the public golf course idea at Harding Park this year, because it gives regular people, guys who aren't incredible golfers, guys who can't afford private country clubs, to go play a public golf course. And I thought that was a great idea, and it would really make the PGA Championship stand out amongst the four majors in its own unique way.
I'd love to see that trend. I think there's enough out there. I mean, a lot of these need to be redone, but I mean, they just redid Memorial Park in Houston. That's a municipal. I mean, not a huge joy to play golf in Houston in August for 4 days, but certainly there.
May, Carl, we're good.
Oh, we're in May. That's right. Yeah.
They moved it back to May. Remember?
See what COVID's done to my brain.
I know, right?
I'm institutionalized. But yeah, no, May in Houston, that could be a huge winner. You're right. Yeah. So yeah, a tremendous concept could really be.
And eventually they'll go back to Harding Park. I mean, they'll go back the U.S. Open goes back to places it's been before. That's not out of the ordinary. I just love that idea. I just thought it was a pretty special one.
It worked.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people enjoyed the golf, the shots of the fog coming up over those cypress trees, and I mean, there's just some really cool, unique things you don't normally get to see.
Special place.
All right, so let's – I do want to dive into Brooks Koepka a little bit. And I loved the way – I'm going to let you say this because right before the show we were talking about this. And I love the way you described his it's not maturity. That's not the word I'm looking for. But his maturation in terms of where he was, who we thought he was, and who he's become.
We talked about this because when we started this show, you were really hard on Brooks Koepka. That's one of the early things I remember about you and I talking about golf early on when we started doing playing through, was that you just thought he was oatmeal on white wallpaper, you know, with, you know, a dash of nothing personality wise. And he's become a guy that's want to say outrageous things, to go toe to toe kind of with Bryson DeChambeau and kind of stick his chest out. Okay, if we go back to kind of the guys we were in high school, he was the dude that, you know, he's kind of the dude looking for something. Or I think what he's looking for, though, is his personality. And what we talked about before the show was that we see him trying to create this character arc, almost like you see in film or in pro wrestling, where he's gone from, we'd like to get you to know you. You're the solitary man. We don't know you. Okay, well, here's who I am. It's a little awkward, but, I've got opinions too. Don't think I don't have opinions. So we've heard some of Brooks' opinions, which I appreciate. I appreciate what he's trying to do. He's trying to bring himself out and show what he's all about. Is it going to be 100% smooth? Is he going to be eloquent and give the best, you know, comedian's delivery every time? Very few guys do. That's rare. But it's a little fascinating that he got into the heat in the top of the leaderboard on Saturday of a major and decides to go full wrestling villain heel and turn it into guys that he doesn't think deserve to win or are going to get scared when they see him come up the leaderboard. I like it. I mean, it's weird. It's counterintuitive in golf to see somebody put up bulletin board material or talk crap or any of that kind of stuff, because we know so many things can go funky in golf. It's not, you know, in football, you know, if Oklahoma's playing Kansas and they're their usual selves, you know, if you've got a mouthy defensive back that says, hey, I think we're going to hang 60 on Kansas, you probably will. In golf, the wind blows. What if you're fighting a block or you get a two-way miss or your putter goes dead? You can't put bulletin board material out in golf.
All right. So here's my – I'm going to give you my Brooks Koepka, my whole spiel here. You're right. When we first started this show year and a half ago, I was bullish. I don't know what the right word is. I didn't love Brooks Koepka. So here's my thought. And you said this best. He went from – he had this personality that was kind of nothing. We were all kind of like, who is this boring character of nothingness that says nothing and whatever. Then he won the first – it was either the PGA Championship or the U.S. Open, and he was just really awkward. He had a very awkward interview. He didn't feel like he was comfortable in front of the camera, is probably the best way to put it. Then he started kind of breaking out of his shell, and then he started making comments to me that were just dumb. Things like, it's not a rivalry with Rory because I don't lose to him. Things like that. I know that's not the exact quote, but it was something to that effect. He said some stuff that I was just kind of like, eh, whatever. But I actually would defend what he said after the third round. And I'm going to tell you why. I listened to his apology. He made an apology Thursday morning or Wednesday, whenever it was. And it wasn't an apology. It was a regret of the way he said it. What he was saying was, I don't look at the guys that are below me. I have no idea who's below me. He was not saying, I don't know who they are. In the sense of, who are these guys? You've never heard of them. He was saying in the sense of, I don't know who they are because I haven't looked. I don't care to look. I look at who's here with me and who's in front of me, and I'm going to go attack that person. The person that was in front of him was Dustin Johnson. And he said, what, Dustin's got one major, and none of these other guys have any? And he wasn't wrong. It wasn't an incorrect statement. I don't think he meant it as a knock on DJ either. I think he was just saying it like, I'm confident in me. I know who's even with me and who's above me. And that's all I look at. It's my tunnel vision for a golf tournament. And I'm moving forward with that. He goes, I guess his regret was that He said the way he said the guys that are at 7 or 8, I don't even know who they are. He wasn't saying, I don't know who Colin Morikawa is. He knows who Colin Morikawa is. I mean, come on, guys. Like, he was just – and he said, I kind of regret the way I said it, I guess. I didn't think that's what he needed to apologize for. And I've kind of – you know, Jason Kidd, when he was drafted by the Mavericks number 2 overall in 1997, made the comment, I'm going to turn this team around 360 degrees. Not the best idea because the Mavericks were terrible. Obviously, he meant a 180. I've kind right. of done a 180 on Brooks Koepka. I kind of like it now. I kind of like the confidence. I think it's good for golf. We talked about how Sergio's good for golf because he gives you storylines and he does things that other golfers don't do. He throws yes. a club in the sand every now and then. So what? I think Brooks Koepka is great for golf. Number one, because people need a villain. And if you're going to make Brooks the villain, that's great. He's still going to win tournaments. He's an unbelievable golfer. I didn't think his third-round comments were that bad. I didn't love the fact – and this is something I go back to a lot. I don't – when guys play bad, I don't like that they don't talk. I think you got to face the media if you play good or you play bad. That's always been a thing with me. Right. He didn't talk after that final round, which I don't love. But just to go back to my Rory point, when he lost to Tiger in match play here in Austin last year, he got in a car and left. And
right.
that night on Instagram released an apology statement saying, I should not have left. I should have stayed and faced the music. I always do. That was a mistake on my part. My apologies to the media. My apologies to people who look at me for answers when I don't play well. I love that. And I think you've got to face the music no matter what. So I didn't love that part of what Brooks did Sunday. But otherwise, I I've done a 180 on him, Carl. I'm kind of on his side now. And I'm kind of like, let's do this. Like, let's see this confidence. Let's see this, how this plays out. I think Sunday was an aberration. I don't think that ever happens again. I think if he makes comments in round 3, he's going to usually back it up in round 4.
Absolutely. What I love about it is exactly what you stated, and that's that it's pure confidence, that he's got the blinders on. It's not that he's slighting the guys that are you know, -7, -8 below him on the leaderboard. It's that he is like a boxer out there, that he is really just focused on doing damage and doing what he knows how to do on the golf course. And I think that's what he's been trying to say all along, is I'm not quiet. I'm not, you know – anti-media. I just want to go out and play the game to the best of my ability. I just want to focus on this dream that I've had and do it like a badass and do it to the most ability that I have. And I think he's starting to kind of get the message out there. He's not shy anymore about saying it, which is cool. It's always going to cut. It seems like you get the statement, it lands. And then you ask him to clarify, and he's like, "Well, what you misunderstood was this," and that's okay. That's kind of where we live now, you know.
I think we all think each other out. I think media members purposely try to make a story out of things sometimes. When if you don't hear the context of something, or you don't hear the physical, you know, if you're not there listening to how he said it, it can absolutely be taken out of context. And I thought his third round comments were a little taken out of context. In terms of what he meant, what he was trying to say. And I know I'm a person that gives people the benefit of the doubt a lot, but I just really believed that he was saying it more in the sense of, he wasn't saying, Bryson and Patrick Reed and some of those guys were right below him. You're going to tell me he doesn't know who Bryson DeChambeau is? I mean, he makes comments about Bryson. Of course he does. he knows everybody that's out there. So I didn't take it that way. And I thought it was a little overblown, but it's good. I also think all that's good for golf. I think it's good for guys to bring all that stuff up. Okay, Carl, we're going to have to hit a break here in a minute, but I wanted to get to this Ryder Cup stuff first because I think it would be a really good conversation.
I've got two spots left on my Ryder Cup team.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think that if you just take the top 12 Americans, you're in great shape. And sure. I think maybe I was the one overblowing this a little bit because below that there aren't a lot of guys that you'd really trust that you want on your side. I mean, listen, and I'm sure all these guys are on your list. Now, you can tell me the two who aren't here, but if you're going to go into a Ryder Cup and your team is Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, Webb Simpson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Tiger Woods, and Daniel Berger, you're pretty happy.
Yes.
Right? So the only people that were left off that list that I think you could consider right now are Gary Woodland, Matt Kuchar, I don't know, Matthew Wolf. Like, I don't know who else. Who else are you going to
– Wait.
Not Ricky Fowler. The standings
you were looking at don't have Gary Woodland.
Those are just the top 12 Americans in world golf rankings. That's it.
A world golf ranking. I'm looking at Ryder Cup standings, which is deep. Yeah, so it's a little bit different. They've still got – the Ryder Cup points still have Gary Woodland 9.
Yeah, and I'm sure – I mean, I want Gary Woodland on that team for sure. He's playing great golf.
So – the bubble is Kevin Kisner, Matt Kuchar, Patrick Cantlay, Kevin Streelman, Matthew Wolf at 17.
So Patrick Cantlay's on the bubble. So he's 12th. He's 12th in the world right now.
Right.
And he's on the bubble for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Isn't that crazy? Isn't it a crazy way to think about it?
It's amazing. Well, yeah, that tells you how good the team is. Yeah. There's a little fluctuation.
There are eight Americans above Patrick Cantlay in the world golf rankings.
And he is
it's incredible. And he's 12.
This is showing him at 15th. No. It's showing him Cantlay at 15th in standings.
In Ryder Cup standings?
Ryder Cup points. That's it when it updated. Yeah, updated today.
That's crazy. So he needs to get on his horse a little bit. But, I mean, they're not going to go into a tournament without Tiger. I mean, obviously, if he doesn't make the team, he'll be a captain's pick. Obviously he's on the team right now because of his play, but yeah, I was looking through that list and I started looking through the, you know, beyond those top 12 in the world. And obviously Gary Woodland's 9 on the Ryder Cup list, but Kuchar and Kisner and Fowler and Kevin Na and Ryan Palmer and Matthew Wolf, Ches Reavie, Billy Horschel, Brendan Todd, Scotty Scheffler, Kevin Streelman. I mean, all these guys are guys that you can trust. I mean, I wouldn't be afraid to go with any of those guys. Joel Damon, Jordan Spieth. I trust those guys in a match play setting. Are there guys I'd rather have than them right now? Sure. But I'd still trust them too. But it's just to me, that's a fun list. Who are the two that you left off that were you said you had your list of 10 with two spots open? Who are the two that you left off?
I feel like I gave my
Cantlay and Berger probably.
No, I bumped Patrick Reed. Surprisingly, I bumped Patrick Reed. I don't know for who.
I was thinking about that too. How funny would that locker room be with Brooks, Patrick, and Bryson?
It's a possibility. I mean, yeah, it's yeah. And then Spieth and Reed have had an unusual relationship through the years, mostly good, but yeah, no, you know, it's interesting. I've actually got Tiger on the bubble. I think for experience and just clutchness, you need him. There's so many good names. How do you take? I know Brendan Todd's going to be wet behind the ears in a Ryder Cup situation. So yeah, I mean, in my heart of hearts, I got to go Woods. But there's a lot of guys making cases for themselves. I mean, you know, even Xander Schauffele at 7, you feel like he's got to be on that team. Berger's earned a right to be on that team.
Yeah, when you get down to those games.
Kisner right on the bubble. Kevin Kisner.
I want you to take this break that we got to take. I want you to take this break and say, do I want Tiger Woods or Kevin Kisner? Do I want Tiger Woods or Brendan Todd? Do I want Tiger Woods or Patrick Cantlay?
I see your point.
I want to see what you say. That's when we come back. You're listening to Play.
You're playing slow, so we're playing too. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Okay, another short final segment here on Playing Through on the Horn. We hope you're on your way to the golf course to beat the heat. And if you're going to play this afternoon, just take all the right precautions. Drink water. Just be cautious of everything that's going on. It was a big week, even with everything going on with the PGA Championship last week. We had the U.S. Amateur going on at Bandon Dunes in Bandon, Oregon. There were four Longhorns that went out and competed. None of them made the round of 64. There's a Texas State player, Logan Lockwood, that went out there. He didn't make the cut either. It was interesting to see five guys with local ties that went out there and did not make make that cut. A couple of them missed it by a shot. But they played Bandon Dunes and Bandon Trails, and then they're at Bandon Dunes now. So a really fun fun week at the U.S. Amateur. Also this week, the George Hannon Junior Invitational. They played here in Austin. Nicole Vivier won the Vandegrift product going to SMU, incoming freshman there. She won on the girls' side. Big congratulations to her. And Keaton Vo dominated, shot final round 65, won by six shots, was 9-under for the two-day total. And congratulations to Keaton as well. A lot of Austin golfers in those fields, and always proud of those guys and girls for getting it done. So congratulations to Keaton and Nicole. Again, junior golf is strong in Austin, Carl. It always is.
Junior golf's amazing. There's just a never-ending pipeline of really good players. It's just amazing, you know. And again, there's so many high-stakes tournaments going on right now. You mentioned the Hannon Junior, and the Texas Amateur just wound up, and Baylor product took the Texas Amateur. I'm just amazed. Number one, the fact that all these tournaments are getting played, and you can't say enough for the way golf has led the way through this pandemic, that, you know, that we've been able to kind of avoid all the controversy, all the strife that other sports are seeing, and kind of just get down to getting to play the game, you know, and you know, kind of have some normalcy, kind of, you know. It's a bummer, you know. I guess when you years from now, you look at the trophy and there's an asterisk, or we've skipped 2020, which is going to be the case for a lot of things, a lot of high school sports, a lot of other things. You know, that in and of itself is really cool. And it's been cool. It's just been good to see.
Really bummed out to see the Masters will allow no fans in November. I can't imagine. I hope what they do is just say, for those who had 20 tickets in 2020, you're going to get tickets in 2021. I didn't see if that's the case or not, but you get one chance. Most people get one chance to go to the Masters in their lifetime. And if you win that lottery and then they have to cancel it on you, that just, what a absolute bummer that would be. So hopefully something like that happens. And they can figure out a way to rectify that and make it okay. But you know, in the end, that's where we are right now, and that's the frustrating thing. I know they canceled Division II and Division III sports championships on the college level. So you know, there are a lot of golf teams on the men's and women's side that aren't going to get to compete, and all those things are very frustrating. But it's kind of just where we, like you said, it's where we are right now, and it's
a
bummer in it all.
My apologies to Trey Bosco of Baylor, who I couldn't remember his name, who won out at Boot Ranch in the Texas Amateur. Yeah. Works with Brian Gathright. I think Gathright's got the Texas Amateur, the high school, and he's got a player going deep in the U.S. Amateur right now. So Brian Gathright down there at Cordillera Ranch is kind of got the golden touch. You know, he worked with Jimmy Walker all those years.
Yeah, and Cordillera is great.
Solid place, really solid place. And Boot Ranch that hosted the Texas Amateur acquitted itself beautifully, obviously. Yep. Great scoring, but, you know, brought out the best of the best for sure.
Well, Carl, always enjoy talking golf with you, and we look forward to doing it again. I'm going to take a hiatus next week, just a one-time off as we enjoy the birth of our daughter, but I'll be back in 2 weeks. And Carl, hopefully you'll find a good guest host. I probably have an idea who you're eyeing, but hope you have a good someone that
I think we'll have a good one. I think the hour will go by just as fast as this one. We've got some candidates in the kitty, but more than anything, man, enjoy every minute of it. These are the most beautiful times, and I know it's highly unusual, but they're going to take great care of you. Just soak it all in. Enjoy every minute. And we'll be thinking, you know, happy thoughts for you and your wife and your family. That's really, really cool.
I'm excited for my wife to be able to breathe again. It's a little tough. So it'll be fun. And I appreciate that, Carl. Thank you for saying that. Look forward to catching up with you in 2 weeks, and look forward to hearing the show next week. Always enjoy it. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballou. Thank you for listening to Playing Through on the Horn. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.